Welcome everybody to the Lockdown Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. As you can maybe hear it in my voice, I'm out here in Vegas still. I am out here in the desert. Although this is the first time I've ever woken up out here without with not even remotely thick. I'm actually kind of proud of myself.
You're getting old, man.
I am. I'm maturing, as my dad likes to say. He says it weird. today's show, and as you can tell, Pete Zayas is on the other end of the line here. We haven't spoken since Kawhi Leonard passed up on the Lakers to sign with the Clippers across the hallway. We haven't spoken also, obviously, since the Lakers rebounded and filled out their roster, essentially. So there's a ton to talk about. We are going to push off the mailbag for later in the week, either tomorrow or whenever. We have a better chance to do that. It would be a poor use of our time right now not to talk about all that has transpired over this last weekend. So we're just going to dive into that. Pete, let's just, what you and I like to do in moments like we had Friday night with such momentous occasions, I kind of just like to put ourselves in the room that we're in at that time. I was actually out to dinner with Harrison, with George Sedano, who's been on the show, and then with Mike Trudell. And what was wild was, so it was funny to see that everybody's reaction, obviously, there to the news dropping itself. And I'm not going to put anybody on blast. But what was wild was that at the restaurant we were at, there was a legitimate, rustle through the crowd. It was crazy. Yeah. Everybody was on their phones. There were quite a few, you know, NBA players and coaches and you know, people you could just tell were associated with teams. A few people rushed out of the restaurant, which I found interesting. Yeah. It was quite the scene. It was crazy to you know, kind of take all that in. Where were you at? What was it like being in the room with Pete Zayas in the moment that he learned Kawhi Leonard was going to Little Brother?
I'm recovering. I had my surgery on Wednesday. Everything went well, but I'm just still a little sore. So unfortunately I couldn't make it out to Vegas. By the way, the scene that you're describing there, part of what's so cool about going to Vegas is that the games are just really a small part of what makes it a fun experience.
Yeah.
It's like being around, you are around both in terms of people who work in different positions in the NBA and the most hardcore fans of teams in the NBA. Yeah. It's just this really awesome environment where everybody's as into it as you are. And so I love that scene that you described. For me, I was at home sitting in kind of an awkward position because that was what was comfortable for my body at that time. And I had text alerts on my phone and I saw Haynes say signing with the Clippers. I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. And
right.
My girlfriend Jeannie was asleep on the couch. And I woke her up. I'm like, oh, he signed with the Clippers. Can you believe this crap? And then moments later is they trade for Paul George. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Because what in the world? That makes no sense. And then the Clippers were always if they got that second guy, they were right in it, if not the favorites. Yeah. It was just how the hell are they going to get this second star? And Paul George obviously popped up. And so, for me, it was it was just this mix of shock and holy crap and trying to process the implications of that. And I'm sure we'll get into that in a moment.
Yeah, I had the same reaction to the news, right? My first reaction, because I'm a people watcher just by nature. I have ADD, so obviously we get the news, and it was funny because Harrison, I'll put Harrison on blast because he's Harrison. He was the person who was like, "You got to be kidding me," and we're like, "What?" And he goes, "Oh my god, what?" Oh my God, Harrison! What? You know? So he's like, Kawhi to the Clippers, and all three of us who were being informed of this at the time were like, wait, what? Right? Because it didn't make any sense. The criticism I was actually going to have of the Clippers in this entire process was that, and it was almost ironic, was that there was this incredible focus on the little things, right? Filling up the organization, filling out the margins of the roster, making smart, efficient moves with, you know, every step along the way, really valuing the infrastructure across the entire franchise. But they still didn't have that one big swing, right? They still,
right.
They had hit single after single after single to load the bases, but they still, if they wanted to land Kawhi Leonard, in my opinion, had to hit that grand slam. And in this case, they did. Right. And they did.
They gave up a lot, man. Yeah. They gave up a lot. But this is if it means that you're getting Kawhi too, you do that every time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that was the same logic we had with the Anthony Davis trade. Right. That was that was for us. It was like, wow, they gave up a lot. But you know what? It puts them in this situation here with Kawhi. So therefore, whatever.
Sure.
But the with the Clippers here. And we'll get into the implications of it, but it was that same kind of reaction of, oh, okay, all right. Because that second domino, I guess technically first domino, I don't know which order it actually went down. But once Paul George was involved here, you said, oh, all right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we are. Today's show, we're basically going to – I want to start with – because you and I, like I said, we haven't spoken about this. I, unfortunately, that night, as you guys are who are listening to this at this point.
I saw the angry tweets. I was like, yeah, I can imagine how that podcast went.
Well, unfortunately, we had one that was super duper fiery. Incredibly, incredibly fiery. Harrison forgot to turn on his mic, and therefore we lost that podcast.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So then we had to record a second one.
And what is that guy doing?
Yeah, I know. So we had to record a second one. And at that point, I was exhausted. I was, you know, I was kind of sort of over the entire thing. When you lose a podcast like that, it's a kick straight to the balls. And mine were already sore because of the Kawhi Leonard. I record that second one. But you and I haven't spoken about the implications of this. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the implications. And then we also have to talk about, you know, had you and I recorded yesterday, we would have said, all right, where do the Lakers go from here? Right. We now know where they have gone from there. So we're going to analyze where they went and the moves that they made after learning that they weren't going to get Kawhi Leonard. So hang tight. We'll be back here in a bit. So my reaction, and I use the analogy, you're an older brother too, right?
Yes, I am.
The analogy that I used was the first time Andrew beat me one-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. The first time I recognized, oh, no, I have to actually, like, try now, right? Like, this uh-huh. and, you know, that first time that you lose to your younger brother or younger sibling, whatever, in that kind of a setting, it's like, and you do so knowing you tried, right? You play it off. You kind of, it didn't, whatever. I spotted you, like, 2 points at the beginning of the game, right? But you know deep down, like, damn it, that was me trying. That was me putting forth full effort here, and I took an L. Right. And I kind of feel like that's the scenario here with the Lakers, where they put out full effort. They made essentially the same trade to land Anthony Davis that the Clippers made to land Paul George. And they took an L, a massive L.
They did.
Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of my immediate takeaway here. Where are you standing there on what this means for the Lakers as an entity? We'll talk about the basketball stuff here in a bit, but like the Lakers as an entity.
So for me, it goes beyond just Kawhi. If it was just Kawhi, it could be like written off as, you know, he's kind of an unusual guy that maybe he didn't want to be a part of a super team, right? Or was concerned about the Lakers front office. Or the problem is that the Lakers didn't just miss out on Kawhi. They missed out on Paul George last year. Mm-hmm. And in the pursuit of Kawhi, they did not pivot toward other guys that they possibly could have had, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if they make an effort for Jimmy Butler, is he more interested in coming here than he was to Miami? I don't know. There's no way to know the answer to that. It seemed like D'Angelo was interested. I'm not particularly interested in maxing D'Angelo as he was, but he was probably the most gettable guy on the market. So it goes beyond just like they traded all the young guys for Anthony Davis, with the exception of Kyle Kuzma, and they had LA, LeBron, and cap space, and they weren't able to get that other max guy to sign on. And that was the plan all along. Now, if that wasn't the plan all along, I'd be a little more forgiving of it. But if you're going to set out and be like, hey, this is what we want to accomplish, I think it's fair to judge a team on whether or not they did right. Did you do what you were setting out to do? Now, I think they did a very good job, and I'm sure we'll get into this more detail later, in terms of their plan B and pivoting. I think they did overall a good job on filling out the team with requisite role players. But at the end of the day, they did not accomplish what they we've set out to accomplish for the last several years, even prior to the Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka administration, right? They carried forward the same plan that Mitch and Jim had of like, hey, we want to sign max guys. Now, Anthony Davis was obviously, they traded almost everything for him, but Anthony Davis did want to be here. In the respect of the Lakers being appealing, I do think that it's important to note that AD wanted to be here one way or another.
Right.
To me, though, that also goes to the point of, well, if you've got that sort of leverage, if you've got what, that type of guy that wants to be here, and you have the rest of the league not offering a ton for him, what position would the Lakers be in right now if they just had one more asset? If you make the exact same trade, but you're able to keep one of Lonzo, Ingram, and or the fourth pick, who would have been Darius Garland.
Yeah. Or even a future pick. They can't make future first-round pick trades right now because of the Stepien rule. Like, they can't do that kind of thing.
That's absolutely right. And kind of working backwards here, I think the Lakers are a legitimate guard away from being a true title contender. Now, I could very well be wrong with that. And if anybody's going to prove me wrong on that, it's a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. So I hope everyone knows I'm rooting to be wrong on this. But I don't think that you can win a title in 2020 with Danny Green as the best guard on your roster. And I don't think it has to be a great player. If it could be a Kyle Lowry or Goran Dragic or someone like that without giving up a whole ton, then I think you're in good position. But the problem is that between the picks dilemma that they're in that you just explained and a relative lack of assets on the roster, how do you go about getting that guy? Let's say if I'm right about that and they do need one more player that needs to be a guard in order to be a true, like, this team should be a favorite or right up there for the NBA title. If I'm right on that, how do you go about getting that guy? Mm-hmm. And that's why like continually just giving up a little too much or paying a guy just a little too much, that becomes, there's an accumulative effect that comes with that to where now we find ourselves, we're like, we might be just one guy short and we didn't have to be.
And that gets back to Pelinka. I mean, that's one of the criticisms you and I have had of him to this point is like, what value does he bring to the table here? Right.
Right.
He's supposed to be seen as this great negotiator. I'm still waiting for, he's had one deal so far that wasn't an overpay, right? The JaVale McGee deal was the only contract or trade or whatever that wasn't seen as an overpay at the time, right? And you know, that you can also, you know, retroactively call an overpay. He was seen as a cap guy, which, like, I guess technically to this point he has managed to cap okay, but you know, you look at the contracts that he signed so far, and DeMarcus Cousins isn't a minimum deal, right? Even I don't think Alex Caruso is a minimum deal.
He's not.
And you kind of, it's like you said, the accumulative effect of all right, where is the negotiation actually taking place here? Like, at what point do you get to flex your negotiation? And unfortunately, the one place that he did flex that negotiation was with Tyronn Lue, and he flexed it so hard that Tyronn Lue told him to kick rocks, right?
Right.
And look,
go ahead. Sorry, well,
I was going to say, I just really want to, you know, tie this back to Kawhi Leonard here, and I want to be clear on this. I was for the process. The process of heading into this offseason and banking on Kawhi Leonard and waiting on Kawhi Leonard was the right move. It was the right gamble to make. It was still, however, a gamble, right? Now, we can go back and we can say, all right, where were you getting your intel from? Why were you so confident? Was that confidence misplaced? Whatever.
That's it. That's yes.
We can talk about that here in a bit, but to me, like, if that is your plan here, if that's your end game here and that's your sole focus, then you have to go full bore on that. And if you're going to go full bore on that, then maybe at least ask to interview the GM whom Kawhi legitimately trusts already, right? We know trust was a big deal to Kawhi Leonard, and he probably trusts Masai Ujiri. One of the questions that Kawhi Leonard had to Magic Johnson that we heard about was, why did you guys try to trade for me when I was with San Antonio, right? Mm-hmm. And if you did try to trade for me, what did you actually try to give up? And you know, Masai literally did trade for him. If he asked Masai that question, Ujiri says, well, I did trade for you.
Yeah, he doesn't even need to ask in the first place.
Exactly. And you know, now the counter that you made when you and I were making this, when we had this conversation off air, was, well, had they asked permission of Toronto to talk to Masai Ujiri, Toronto likely, because of the situation, says, no, you cannot, right? But they never even asked, is a thing.
Right.
They didn't even go that far. And you know, you want to extend it beyond Masai Ujiri, they never asked permission to talk to anybody. And right. And again, and what it all comes down to is, okay, if this is your big plan, if this is what you're really fully investing your entire future of your organization to, right, and you have an actual dynasty on the line here, that's the big thing. The stakes here was a dynasty, and they didn't actually go full bore. They didn't do everything that they could to put themselves in the situation here where they could pull that off. And that's where I have the biggest problem with this. The process, whatever. We could talk about that later. But if you're going to have that process, you got to do everything you possibly can to actually execute it. And I cannot for the life of me make it even a case that they did, because we know they didn't. They didn't hire a coach that Kawhi Leonard was. We don't know how Kawhi Leonard feels about Frank Vogel, right? Let alone Jason Kidd and Lionel Hollins, who are ready and waiting whenever Frank Vogel is inevitably fired. We know they didn't go after an executive that Kawhi Leonard trusts. They sent Magic Johnson there and weren't on the same page to where, like, if you send Magic Johnson to that meeting and you know how important it is to Kawhi Leonard and his camp not to leak anything, you have to absolutely stress to Magic Johnson, you cannot leak anything, right? And we found out after the fact that that actually mattered, right? Chris Carter, who was really close to Kawhi Leonard, said that that didn't help. Maybe it didn't hurt, but we know it didn't help, right? And so all these things kind of come together, and while the process is unquestionable, the idea behind the process was unquestionable, the execution of said process was hugely flawed, and I think that's where the Lakers stand right now.
So let's further this point into two separate parts. First of all, the Lakers have decided a long time ago that they were going to build around their capability to attract players. And that's not a bad plan. Franchise like the Lakers, which does have a lot going for them. But then what is the nature of free agency? The nature of it is convincing somebody else to pick you when they have other options, right? So when that becomes the framework within you're operating, that makes it all the more important to do the things that you're talking about, is to get a coach that, like, so we don't know how Kawhi felt about Vogel. What we do know now is that he met with Doc Rivers for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Right. We don't know how he felt about Pelinka and Magic's in this kind of weird purgatory where he's not part of the organization anymore, but Kawhi wanted to know, like, his involvement. So he's kind of this in-between spot. I think for both the coaching staff and the front office, simply through the lens of a max free agent, of what does a max free agent want, the best that the Lakers can hope for is that those particular people are not a detriment to the Lakers.
They aren't net negative.
Because they're certainly not an asset. So all you can hope for is that it's not a big deal. The things that other front offices and coaching staffs are operating with, and this isn't a knock on Vogel. Vogel hasn't done anything.
No.
And has been an okay enough coach, right? But through the lens of I'm a max free agent, one of the best players in the world, what do I want out of this place that I'm going to choose? Other places had a Masai Ujiri, right? Where, like, Toronto shouldn't have even been in this conversation. He didn't want to be there. And through the actions of how they worked, they were at least in the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the work that Ujiri did and Nick Nurse and just that whole organization being well-run, put them at least in a conversation that they shouldn't have been in. The Clippers are a similar position where a guy like Doc Rivers, you know, is one of the great, I don't want to say salesmen in the game, but he's one of the most respected guys amongst players.
Statesman,
one of the most respected.
I would almost say.
The statesman is a perfect ambassador, statesman. That's a perfect way of putting it. He's one of those guys. And so I'm not necessarily arguing, even though we totally could, that Pelinka's terrible and Genie's terrible and Vogel, you know, isn't worth a damn, but they're not assets. And if the way that you choose to build your team is dependent upon what somebody else wants, you have to do everything in your capability of appealing to them on every level, and the Lakers did not do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know what? Like, Harrison forced me to do some bat padding.
I still didn't get it.
Did I?
Back padding.
Back padding. There you go.
There you go.
You know, Harrison.
So, tell us how smart you are after doing.
Every step along the way here, I've always hammered home, and you and I have always hammered home, those small things do matter, right? The Lakers are good at the big things. They were good at appealing in a big way to LeBron James by way of the dynastic success that the brand itself puts off, right? But that isn't Jeannie Buss. Like, she didn't have, like, she wasn't at the helm of any of the titles.
And that's the thing, is that, like, even the appeal to LeBron, I mean, how many people could have gotten him to the Lakers? Right. Like, I wouldn't even say the Lakers are good at the big things. I think they're okay at the big things and good enough bad to get LeBron. At the little things. Right. But the things is, we've got so many built-in advantages that, like, the reasons for LeBron coming to the Lakers extend well beyond the capability of the owner, the GM, the coach, et cetera. There are many reasons for him to be here beside just that. So I would argue that a lot of different people could have gotten LeBron to the Lakers a couple of years ago. So I don't even think that they're good at the big things. I think they're okay at them.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay wasn't enough. You know, that's the whole time we were sitting here hoping that okay would be enough because it was previously, but it wasn't, you know, and that's where, you know, I go back to that wake up call when the first time Andrew beat me one-on-one, I went immediately to the gym and I hopped in there and I said, that can't happen again anytime soon.
Sure.
I got it.
Sure.
And the next time I played him, you know, I made sure to beat the ever living piss out of him, both on the scoreboard and in playing him. Right. And that's like, that's that wake up call. And I'm not here tooting my own horn as an athlete. I am not an athlete. I'm effing around, but I'm just saying that here's the opportunity, and this is my takeaway here, is that this is the wake up call. Little brother just beat you one on one, man. Where are you going to find out? What are you going to find out about yourself?
The problem is that we kind of pivot away. This is the end of the Tumax era, in my opinion, right? By spending the money that they did. Now, we will be having these conversations in 2021 when Giannis is a free agent and a lot of these guys come off the book and LeBron James has the option to opt into his contract or not. The Lakers, my concern is that the Lakers, it didn't go badly enough for the Lakers to like reevaluate like how they do things. It didn't like completely crash and burn. I'm sure we'll talk in the next segment about what they did do and where they go from here. But my concern is that it didn't go badly enough and they're not still in the same phase where nothing meaningful is going to change in a way that they need to address where they had shortcomings in this process.
See, I actually kind of disagree. Like,
oh, interesting.
In terms of like the way this could have played out with Kawhi Leonard specifically, this is worst case scenario. Like this,
sure, but they won't look at it like that. They'll look at it like, hey, we got LeBron and AD. We got Danny Green, who's a good player. We filled out the roster with guys that we like. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't going to be a bad team.
But that's the problem. Is that like again? It's this is so. Yes, you're right. You are objectively right. That the Lakers, and we'll talk about this. We'll talk about this here in a bit, right? Where the Lakers are actually a pretty decent roster next year, but compare pretty decent roster to effing dynasty, and that dynasty went across the hall to like if you're just talking because
let's slow down on the
I'm not saying that the Clippers are a dynasty.
I'm saying the
opportunity that the Lakers had at that dynasty, like that guy is now across the hallway, you know. So I guess the one thing that the Lakers love to hold up is their greatness, right? We are the gold standard. We are what all other franchises hope to be. We do not take these kinds of L's. Well, they just did, you know, and they just took one to the team that they could least afford to take it to, right? Mm-hmm. The Knicks are in the same spot, right? But everybody knows the Knicks are an effing joke. So, you know, you move on. The Knicks took that L to Brooklyn, and everybody knows James Dolan is a lifetime loser in the role that he is with the Knicks. The Lakers aren't that though, and they can't they can afford to take this L because, like you said, they're in a good spot. They'll be fine next year. They'll be competitive for a title next year, but in this respect, I don't think they could afford to take this L. This was Jeannie Buss's first test. Like this was her first go at striking out and making her imprint on this franchise, And the moves that she made to get the Lakers here failed. They did not get the guy that they were competing against the Clippers to get. And the moves that Steve Ballmer put together to put the Clippers in that spot succeeded. And like that's all I'm saying is that L is a tough one to swallow.
I completely agree with that. But what I would say is that the alternative where the Lakers actually ended up is not going to be bad enough for them to make any substantive changes.
Yeah.
I think both things can be true at the same time.
I'll ask one more question. We'll go to break. If Dr. Jerry Buss takes this L, and he wouldn't, we know this, but if Dr. Jerry Buss takes this L and watches Rob Pelinka take this L, that's probably enough for him to fire Rob Pelinka, right?
I don't think Rob Pelinka is the GM in the first place. Secondly, I don't think Pelinka was a big enough player. Look, I've got plenty of criticism for Pelinka. I don't think that he was a big enough player in this to have been the guy who took the L, right? Yeah. The main person responsible for it. That's but kind of part of the problem is that, like, that's part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
Jerry West and the Clippers front office were able to convince Kawhi that that was the place that he wanted to be. Masai Ujiri was a big positive. Like, for the Lakers, the best thing we could say is that, well, it wasn't really Pelinka's fault because he wasn't that involved. Why don't we have one of those big boys that does get involved, that makes a free agent? Like, bro, you saw how everyone walked up to Jerry West, who I do think gets a little too much credit for what is an otherwise very good front office on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
With the Clippers, but you saw how like LeBron and Anthony Davis and walked up to Jerry West, and all these players walked up to him at Summer League, right? Mm-hmm. He's one of the godfather. You talked about Doc Rivers as one of the statesmen and ambassadors of the NBA. Well, what is Jerry West, man? He's the friggin' logo, right? He is that to the nth degree. My only question is why is just a non-factor at best, but is actually an active reason why somebody would want to come to the Lakers. In fact, Magic, for all of his faults, did have some of that appeal.
Yeah, could have been that.
For like, it could have been that in the proper role. He comes with a lot of BS, but he is a guy that people looked up to. I would like the Lakers to have, and I, and maybe this is my Lakers exceptionalism as a fan, but there is no reason that this franchise shouldn't have a guy that both has the charisma to wow and attract and appeal to the best players in the NBA and the technical chops to be able to execute the job. We had the former with Magic, but not the latter. Jerry West is one of those guys that does both, and the Lakers should have one of those guys in the front office.
Slight tinfoil moment, but I don't think it was an accident that LeBron made sure he was in front of TV cameras when he was talking to Jerry West.
I don't think LeBron is an accident.
I don't think anything LeBron does is an accident, and that especially, you know, he's going up to talk to the guy who just got Kawhi Leonard from under the Lakers. No,
right?
That was
he's had cameras in front of him his entire adult life. Like, no.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick second here. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the way that the Lakers have rebounded here and the roster that they have put together here moving forward. So hang tight and we will be back in a bit. All right. So the Lakers, however, they take the L that we just talked about last segment. But they do it. This is the one place where, if I'm being absolutely fair, I have to again praise the process that they appear to have approached this offseason with. They had Kawhi Leonard in mind, and then if they didn't get Kawhi Leonard, they had a contingency plan in place that they immediately moved to. Would you roll with that analysis of the way that they've handled everything else?
Absolutely. They had, and I think it probably cost on a couple of contracts a couple million dollars to be like, hey, will you wait for us?
Yeah.
You know,
that
like
we'll
make
that's
it worth a while.
I haven't thought about it.
I think that's a fair thing. The only guy that I thought was particularly overpaid was KCP. Now, is relative to what other backup guards like Valentin and a couple of other guys. This $7-8 million per year is kind of what the market value has been for those type of guys. I would just argue that in some years, for example, 2016, Jan Mahinmi, Noah, and all got over $15 million a year. And so I remember at the time people being like, well, that's just what the going rate is for that particular type of guy. And then in retrospect, like, well, all of them got overpaid, right? Like that doesn't necessarily make it a good decision. Mm-hmm. But the other moves they made have either been very slide overpays, or I really enjoyed what they did with Boogie. Like, I've been really happy with how they had that backup plan and was able to execute by getting most of the best available.
Yeah, they wind up adding, you know, so they bring back KCP, they bring back JaVale McGee. It looks like they're going to bring back Rondo, which was the one move thus far that has pissed me off. Like, that one annoyed me. That one kind of bothered me. Though even there's an explanation to it, right? You know, maybe Anthony Davis really wanted to play with Rajon Rondo. LeBron James seems to really respect Rajon Rondo, and thus you have Rajon Rondo still, right? So whatever. But everybody else, Danny Green is a solid addition to the roster right now. Alex Caruso coming back is a solid addition. Quinn Cook fills an important role as a point guard who can spread the floor. All of these things are important role players that the Lakers now have that they seem to have had as contingency plans in place just in case Kawhi Leonard didn't happen. So at least you got that.
Yes. Yeah. So I wouldn't pay $15 million for Green over 3 years. I get about $36 million, fair to me. But when you want a guy on a shorter term contract, you're going to pay a little bit more on an annual basis. I do think that there's a bit of a waiting fee, right? Like, to be like, no, don't sign with Dallas. And that was his standing offer, according to Brian Windhorst, was to go to Dallas. We'll give you $2 and $30 to pay for the right for you to wait and to have everybody expiring at the same time. Danny Green, I'm really excited about because of his fit alongside. Like, Danny Green has a lot of flaws in the game, but what he does well, and I've been really getting into the tape on him over the last couple of days, and there's been a couple of surprises in terms of like how he gets his threes. I mean, like, he is somebody collapses defense and kicks inside out. He's not as good on screens as I thought he would be. I'd watch him on tape. But if it's like a drive and kick or the post gets double teamed, he is like the shooter in the world on making those when he's already facing the basket. And the Lakers have, with James's ability to the rack, and then with Boogie and Anthony Davis's ability on the inside, and both of the backers as well, he's going to really eat off of what the Lakers are able to do from a personnel. Vogel does, but I really love that fit there.
I do too. You mentioned DeMarcus Cousins and the way that he'll be able to potentially feed Danny Green on the perimeter. That to me was a Boogie. It was funny. He's become a bit of a running joke right now because of the situation he was in last year and how long it's been since he was at his peak. But to me, you know, you look at when you're filling out a roster with a lot of guys, either at cheaper deals or veteran minimum type deals or whatever, what you're looking for are guys who can outplay that value. And of people playing at the value that DeMarcus Cousins is playing at, he's just about as, if not more, capable of outplaying that value as anybody else in that price range.
Amen to that. I absolutely love the Boogie signing. Yeah. He's a guy that he was really starting to round into form, and the Achilles is usually a 2 year type injury where, uh-huh, you know, in that second year where you come back, you're close. Was a legit max guy a couple of years ago. Now he's 28 or 29 years old on post Achilles, and I don't want to act like he's ever going to be the guy that he was prior to that. That dude can still play. And yeah, there is an argument made that the Lakers are trying to go a very physical path to now. How well can you do that in 2020 is going to be interesting to see. LeBron, Anthony Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins in a front court is physical as hell, man.
Yeah.
And if you look at the Clippers, and if you look at a team like Houston, who I think those are the two teams, along with Denver, who are the probably the biggest contenders, along with the Lakers and conference. The Clippers are not that great amongst their big guys right now. That's where the holes on that roster is. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis absolutely chewed up Montrezl Harrell. John AD last year, I will take matchup every single time, right? And like, they have huge advantage there, and maybe that's where they're looking to really exploit. So Boogie is in the past been a great builder. He can come back to 70% of what it was prior to the injury. And, you know, he had the quad injury in the finals, and he's going to be a really good player. Not the finals, but really performance contract, like you said. I also like that the Lakers have a depth at that position in a way that doesn't make them dependent upon Boogie. They got JaVale back. Anthony Davis' position is at the five, even though there are, I don't entirely agree with the notion that he doesn't like playing there. I think that's kind of an old thing. But basically, you have three guys who are five on his team. So I'm really surprised they were able to pull that off. For me, that was the best contract of the offseason for them.
Yeah, I agree. And really what it comes down to is look, the Lakers' best lineups are going to have LeBron at the four and Anthony Davis at the five. Like, we know this, right? But can you get to those lineups to and put those lineups in a spot where they can really take over the game? And in order to do that, you need guys like JaVale McGee. You need guys like DeMarcus Cousins. You need those type of role players who can extend those minutes and get you to a spot where you can fully take advantage of the other team as a result of those lineups out there. Let's just throw this. We'll end on this, and because it's already a longer show than we anticipated. What do you think the Lakers' best lineup is going to be?
Ooh, so we're talking closing down the stretch type of lineups.
Yeah.
This is going to surprise people, I think, a little bit, and maybe gets me some angry responses. But I think you're right with AD at the five and LeBron at the four. Then I think you've got Kuzma in there. Danny Green is the fourth guy. And then the fifth guy, where I think people would disagree with me, is actually KCP. Mm-hmm. I think that he's a guy who can defend guards down the stretch of games, especially. I don't want LeBron being our only ball handler. I would like Alex Caruso to start, and so that LeBron doesn't have to be our only shot creator on the court every night, and we don't have to start Rondo, right? Like, we shouldn't be starting Rondo regardless. I would like LeBron not to carry that burden and that wear and tear, so he has a secondary ball handler next to him. So I vote for Caruso to start. The last 5 minutes of a close game, I think that on some nights it might be Caruso, but I think that LeBron is going to be your point guard, the guy you give the ball to. It becomes a lot of two-man game with AD and LeBron, and then everybody else can knock down open threes, mm-hmm. right? Where with Danny Green, KCP, and then Kuzma is the questionable guy in that, right?
Like, he needs to get better.
The one missing piece, well, there are a couple. I said earlier that the Lakers need a legit guard, and I do believe that. The one thing that I think they could get, I would love to have Andre Iguodala, man, to have another guy who can be able to defend wings, where you've got Danny Green and Andre Iguodala to defend the Kawhi Leonards and Paul Georges of the world and not have to rely on LeBron. And if Kuz is not, like, we're hoping Kuz can shoot this year, right? Yeah. Well, what if he doesn't, right? Then a guy like Iggy, I'd rather have him out there. So I'd like to have Kuz out there, and I think he's capable, but I would also like to not have to depend on him to be able to come through on that. How about you, man? Who would be your, like, closing five in a close game?
I would agree with yours. I thought about this heading into the show.
Interesting.
I do. And what I think is also important to point out here about that closing five is the political ramifications there that you won't see as deeply as if you have Caruso out there as your finishing point guard. Now, there are, like you said, games where he's going to make more sense, you know, because it does help to have a point guard out there and somebody who thinks like a point guard. But, you know, if it's KCP, he's the clutch guy, right? He's the clutch tax that appears to have been levied against the Lakers as a result of having LeBron and Anthony Davis on the roster. But you know, if you're just talking about the political ramifications in the locker room of not having Rajon Rondo as part of that finishing five, if it's Alex Caruso, it's harder to make that case to the veterans in the room. If it's Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, though, you can make a different selling case to LeBron when he asks, or when he and Anthony Davis, I'm doing air quotes, requests that Rajon Rondo is out there to finish those games. So, yeah, I agree with yours. There is no scenario here where Rondo would be involved in those roles, you know, unless he just decides to turn the switch and turns into playoff Rondo for the one or two games per season that he does that. But, yeah, I agree with yours. And the thing that I really like, though, about this roster is, and it's, you know, it can also be a bit of a hindrance because it can lead to manipulating or being finicky with the lineups is the number of different looks that you have here. Like if you want to go, if you want to go super big, well then cool. You could have Anthony Davis, Boogie, and LeBron out there in your front court, right? If you want to go super duper small, you can go Alex Caruso, KCP, Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma, and LeBron out there as your five. If you want to go more traditional, like you, we talk about the JaVale McGee kind of a lineup, which I think is going to be their starting lineup, right? Where it's going to be, it'll probably, hopefully it'll be Alex Caruso, Danny Green, probably LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and JaVale McGee. That'd be my guess as the starting lineup. But you have all these different, you have different lineups that that you can offer to different situations, which, you know, come playoff time is really important. If you only have one lineup that you can really heavily lean on, that's where you get into trouble because you become really easy to scout. And I think that's the point of this, the way that this team was put together was with the playoffs in mind. And my last question here is, do you think it's the kind of team that can, that's good enough to get you not only into the playoffs, but into a good spot in the playoffs?
I think this is a better 16 game team than an 82 game team. I still think that we're a guard away. I don't think that guard has to be a great player. I think he has to be a good one.
How dare you? Bald, big Balder brand. Kawhi Leonard is livid at you right now.
I think they're close. And if there's going to be a version of this that proves me wrong, it's going to be LeBron and Anthony Davis. Like, one thing about AD, and I'll be making a video about this, is AD absorbs some of the running your offense responsibilities in the way that Jokic does for Denver. He's not as good of a passer, but so much of how they run their offense or ran their offense in New Orleans was involved, revolved around giving the ball to AD at the top of the key. And then guys running off of screens were off with him, where he's going to make that read, make the handoff, kick it out to the shooter, fake handoff, drive himself. But him being kind of the central hub of everything that goes on, that he will. So it's been very optimistic. He's going to. No, he's capable of it. And of all the guys on the roster, he would be the guy that I would be. I would bet that is most able to absorb those responsibilities on both ends of the court. But like, can help alleviate. So, like, he throws the ball, and you don't have to have the only alternative, LeBron handling the ball, being Caruso. You can distribute it a little bit more. AD also gives you bits in a small lineup and in a big lineup with his ball handling ability, his shot blocking. He's such a unique talent that really the only guy to me that's comparable to him in the NBA is Giannis. And his ability to be like big with small. So I really like this team, and I don't want people to think that I'm really down on them. I just think one guy away from being like, yes, that is the title favorite in the NBA. If not, I think they're in like third or fourth best team in the NBA type of range. Yeah. And I could be wrong. It's not that far away from being the title was that this year and cut some breaks along the way, right?
Yeah.
So they ain't that far away. I just think they're there. How about you?
No, I completely agree. The big talking point that has been made, one of my favorite things when I come out here to Vegas is it gives me like firsthand experience of some of the talking points that I can kind of predict over the course of the season. It's actually a great table setter getting ready for next year or the following year. And one of the big talking points that I've made sure to make personally, but I've started to see made, you know, from other people who I listen to here is, yeah, we're probably going to get one of those, oh shit, that's right, Anthony Davis is really effing good. Right.
Right.
Like we're going to have a lot of those conversations. He's almost become borderline underrated in my opinion. And I think we're going to resume that talking point of, oh yeah, that's right. That's why he was considered the best, you know, big prospect since Tim Duncan. So that is something I'm really looking forward to. I'm really looking forward. Like, here's the thing. My disappointment with the way, obviously, the offseason essentially started, right? Because their offseason started as soon as the Kawhi Leonard decision was made. My disappointment with how the offseason started is not mutually exclusive, is not mutually exclusive from my excitement in this roster. I just, you know,
yes.
It's hard in that moment, you know, when you record at 2:30 in the morning, having already lost a podcast and also lost Kawhi Leonard, like it's hard in that moment to get back and focus on that a little bit more. But it's still like that's where we should stand. Is like that sucks that the Clippers now have Kawhi Leonard and also, by the way, Paul George. And I think the irony there is too thick for even Hollywood to get by with. But that doesn't mean, though, that this team can't also meet and exceed our expectations. And I think they've put themselves in a spot where they can. And again, I'm a slave to process, and the process here is present. It's a clear and present process where they said, this is our focus to start. If we don't go with him, we've done our work to secure a contingency plan. And mm-hmm. and yes, it costs a little bit more per signing, but that does ensure that they weren't completely left out in the cold, right? And the fact that they were able to account for both of those outcomes, to me, like that's how, you know, I don't think Rob Pelinka will ever really be a Bob Myers type executive. I think he's playing from too far behind the eight ball at this point. Mm-hmm. But this is where you kind of look at it and you say, all right, I see that. All right. And you know, it's a bit of a pick me up for those like myself who have questioned him at just about every step. And that's all that you could really ask for, given the starting place of building this specific roster.
Right. Given who Rob Pelinka is, right, as like he did as well as we could hope for with the plan B. Was always the guy that was in charge of plan B and not really much of a factor in plan A.
Now,
your part of my complaint is that why don't this guy that can be part of plan A, right? And the appealing pieces of that. That isn't who Rob Pelinka is.
Right.
For who, considering who he is, he did well, right? And he was Andre Iguodala's former agent. If Iguodala hits the market, Iggy's always spoken very highly of Pelinka compared to Pelinka. The people who are above him on the food chain always swear by him, whether it was he as an agent. Kobe loved him. Iguodala loved him. Harden loved him. All of these guys that he worked for loved him, right? It's the people below him that are like, dude, what is with this guy, right? And there is some value in that, but he executed this well, and I do think that if Iggy hits the market, he's going to get him here. So for all of my criticism of Rob Pelinka and still thinking that the Lakers should have one of the big boys in that position, he did a good job.
Yep, absolutely. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Tomorrow I will probably be opening up the mailbag, and then Tuesday or for Wednesday show will be a travel day, so we'll figure out what we're going to do for there. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.